From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As U.S. coronavirus deaths edge closer to 100,000, President Donald Trump spent the weekend golfing. The federal government released its strategic national plan on how to tackle the pandemic, a secret document that was more of a report on what states were already doing rather than an actual federal plan. And White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett, in an interview on CNN, referred to workers as human capital stock. All indicators from the Trump administration to American workers point out little concern over their welfare, as many are forced to return to work with few assurances for their health and safety. It is no wonder that the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, has received nearly 15,000 coronavirus-related complaints from workers around the country. My guest is Remington A. Gregg, Counsel for Civil Justice and Consumer Rights at Public Citizen. Welcome to the program, Remington.
Thank you.
So what exactly is such a complaint to OSHA mean? This is a country with very few labor protections, especially those workers who are not in unions, rarely have recourse for help. I am imagining that an OSHA complaint is a pretty serious step for a worker.
That's correct. While they can be anonymous, I mean, the fact that you are making a complaint will likely not be looked kindly on by your employer. Now, under the health and safety law, OSHA, there is no private right of action. So you cannot sue a company, your employer, for workplace violations under that federal law. Your remedy is to file a complaint. However, the Trump administration is priding itself on its deregulatory actions, on not enforcing the law against bad actors. So it's really difficult to understate how difficult it is for workers to actually have real protections right now.
One of the industries in particular that is in the news is the meatpacking industry, primarily because it seems to be one of those industries that's a hotspot for virus infections. There have been something like 11,000 workers in the meatpacking industry. And we're talking about the big companies here like Smithfield and Tyson Foods, 11,000 workers that have been infected so far. And President Trump declared meatpacking the industry in a essential industry and invoked the Defense Production Act. It seems as though meatpacking workers are in a particularly tough situation because they are essentially being forced to return to an unsafe workplace. And the federal government, which is supposed to have their back, is the one that has the corporations' back.
I mean, what we're seeing throughout this pandemic is that the economy is riding on the backs of low-wage earners, on black and brown workers, on recent immigrants. And so there aren't many protections for constituencies like that. And we are reopening now the country and potentially making it less safe for these workers simply because we want to do the bidding, or the federal government at the moment under the Trump administration wants to do the bidding of the corporate America and the Chamber of Commerce. If we start opening businesses back up, first and foremost, they have to ensure that their workplaces are safe. They have to provide a reasonably safe workplace. And if they don't, they should be held accountable. And any sort of provision or plan to remove accountability would make workplaces less safe.
There was an interesting report in the Guardian newspaper specifically around black workers who say that they feel that they are expendable. You see African-American workers in particular dying of disproportionately higher rates than I believe any other demographic group, more than one third higher rate than their share of the population. And of course, a lot of the low wage work in this country is done by black and brown workers, right? So these are the particularly vulnerable workers.
That's right. And that's what's so distressing. Not only are we seeing Black and brown workers in particular, Black people being disproportionately impacted, affected by coronavirus and dying from it, but we're also now seeing how they're being pushed back into the workforce. And so when people say things like, we need to get this economy back up and running, they're not talking about every place in the economy. They're not talking about opening up every office building. They're not talking about ensuring that, just today, the New York Stock Exchange opened under limited capacity. When we're talking about white collar workers and workplaces and workspaces, we are, as a society, we tend to make sure that those workplaces are safe. When we talk about opening up the economy, let's be clear, we're talking about workspaces for Black and brown people. I mean, there is one case that right now of a former Walmart worker who died, a Black man who allegedly his managers did not take his complaints, health complaints, seriously, and he died. Have we learned anything from what happened at the beginning of this nightmare that we're currently in? I'm not so certain. And that's what's so really dangerous about how we flippantly talk about reopening the country, because we're not talking about putting every person in harm's way. We're talking about specific sectors of our society that are being put in harm's way.
So it seems as though the federal government has multiple ways in which it is making it harder for workers to return to work in a safe environment, and essentially, you know, coming down on the side of corporations, in addition to Trump wanting to oppose extending unemployment insurance. His Labor Department has also encouraged companies to snitch on those workers whose jobs are available but who feel unsafe about returning to work because they don't want to pay them unemployment benefits. And then the most striking one is Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, who wants to protect corporations from liabilities in coronavirus-related lawsuits by workers. This, to me, seems really indicative of how overt they are about forcing workers to return to unsafe environments, right? Because if there was no fear of if workplaces were indeed safe, there would be no fear over coronavirus-related lawsuits, right?
That's exactly right. Our laws serve, there's a dual function to our laws. Number one, we have government enforcement. And number two, we have access to the courts, to the justice system. And if one fails, generally we have the other. Right now, the federal government is not enforcing our health and safety laws to any sort of satisfaction of most worker rights advocates. If you take away their right to hold them accountable in the court system, then there's absolutely no accountability for corporate bad actors. And really, that's the point on their part. You know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has been seeking such immunities for years, and they're using a pandemic as a hook to get that. And what worker rights advocates and consumer rights advocates and patient protection advocates are saying is absolutely no way. We're not going to grant you some immunity from liability when you create an unsafe space, especially during a pandemic.
So you let's go back to the OSHA complaints. Nearly 15,000 workers complained to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which is under the Department of Labor, overseen by Labor Secretary Eugene Scalia, son of the late conservative Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. What industries are these workers who have complained primarily from? And do we know anything about the nature of the complaints that they've submitted to OSHA?
We don't. We don't know that. But what we do know is that there is a, right now, meatpacking industries, the meatpacking industry, as well as the nursing home industry, are two hotspots for coronavirus. And so I suspect that a lot of complaints are coming from these sorts of workspaces where you are tightly compact, where a lot of people may not speak English or speak English well, so they are often discounted. Low-wage workers, and workers that generally are just pushed to the side of society. So we are really concerned that if you remove these protections for workers to band together to be able to hold their employers accountable, it'll be complete open season, a complete disregard for worker safety, especially in those hotspots that at the moment are really dangerous places for workers to be, and would be even more so without any sort of protection.
Do you see this move by the federal government as an act of racial injustice? You have, in particular, white supporters of Donald Trump clamoring to reopen businesses, refusing to wear masks, showing up armed at state capitals, and not facing very serious consequences, and knowing that they are less vulnerable to the virus because of longstanding systemic healthcare advantages over people of color.
Well, that's absolutely right. And that's why it's so important to talk about this as an issue, not just for all people, it clearly is in all workers, but it is also a racial justice problem. It is a racial justice issue. It is a gender justice issue. 90% of nurses and psychiatric workers in psychiatric facilities are women. One third of all essential workers right now are women. A majority of Black and Brown people fill the low wage earner slots. So when we talk about these issues, we have to talk about them in the broader context of systemic racism, in the broader context of how we treat people who don't have fancy lobbyists to work on their behalf, and how we're willing to reopen the economy on the backs of people who suffer from both economic and health disparities, that this will make all of that even worse.
So those workers who are too scared to return to an unsafe work environment, they don't have recourse to sue their workplaces. They might be getting their unemployment benefits pulled. They may not be in a union. They may have at the most filed an OSHA complaint. What's next? I mean, how does OSHA respond to these complaints if that's one of the few recourses that are left, at least at the federal level, for workers? Does OSHA actually respond even during an administration that might be more labor-friendly than the one we have now? Does OSHA respond adequately to worker complaints?
Well, I mean, I think the key in your question was adequately. I have no doubt that OSHA, which is filled with a lot of dedicated civil servants, will attempt to investigate at least some of these claims. Whether they do so to the satisfaction of worker advocates is another question. Will they actually go to these places and really kick the tires and look under the engine to see, are these employers putting their workers first? Are they engaging in reasonable actions to keep them safe? Are they going above and beyond to keep them safe so that we don't have a spike in these places? I still don't believe that. I mean, Eugene Scalia, the labor secretary, is a former corporate lawyer for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Now, obviously, just because you were a lawyer for a company, for an organization, doesn't mean that we can completely say you're totally in the bag for them. But his entire career up until this point, except for a small time previously at the Labor Department, has been defending corporations. So it's hard for us to believe that the Labor Department will put workers first when the person at the top of the helm has made a career of defending employers against workers.
I imagine that depending upon the industry, there might be safe ways to reopen a workplace if an employer got ensured that all workers had access to adequate personal protective equipment, maybe trained them, brought in healthcare experts to train them on how best to use that equipment, ensure proper social distancing, right? One could conceivably imagine, depending on the industry, that it might be possible in some circumstances to open in the right way. But it's not clear. There's certainly no federal government leadership on this. There's only some half-hearted recommendations that the CDC has put out. States, I guess it depends on what state you live in, might or might not be offering the right kind of leadership. But, you know, are there, as far as you can tell, circumstances in which employers could be doing it in the right way, could be reopening industries in the right way? Because we cannot remain closed indefinitely.
There are ways. And let's be very clear. I think we all want to see our country reopen, but we want to do so safely. We don't want to do it on the backs of those who are our quote unquote essential workers, who are so many of them black and brown and low income. If employers and if companies abide by strong guidance from the government on how to reopen, on how to operate, and they take reasonable precautions, they have a defense. If, say, anyone sues them, they have a defense to say, I abided by health and safety laws and regulations, and that is a defense. And in many states, that it's called regulatory compliance defense. In many states, that is the end of the story. If you are found to have abided by health and safety guidance. That's it. That is your defense. Now, what we need is strong leadership from the federal government to put out those enforceable, robust standards. And we haven't. We've tried, and worker rights advocates have tried to get that in place from the federal government, but the federal government is resisting. They are resisting putting up any sort of guidance in which businesses are being held to a standard. And that's what's so frustrating. If businesses, and businesses are saying, we want that guidance, we want those standards because we want to operate safely. So the leadership has to come from the federal government. And once the federal government does that, and it should do that, businesses can follow that and they can follow it safe in the knowledge that they should be protected.
The federal government has been for months dragging its feet. And not only has it stood in the way of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention from releasing detailed guidelines, it also just had not turned over any sort of strategic federal plan. But this past Sunday, which was the deadline that Congress had given the federal government to turn over a plan, an 81-page document called the COVID-19 Strategic Testing Plan was turned over to four congressional committees, not made public, but one person on Capitol Hill leaked it to the Washington Post. So we got a glimpse of what the Trump administration was thinking. Now, first of all, obviously such a document is far too late. It needs to come well in advance of advising state economies to open up. But apparently, at least as per the paper, this particular plan doesn't actually outline any plan. It isn't much of a plan. Mostly all it says is lists what states are already doing rather than lay out goals for the federal government. The one goal it has is to buy 100 million nasal swabs, testing swabs, and to distribute them to states. But it's giving itself until the end of this year to achieve that goal. Meanwhile, of course, Trump's main goal seems to be to reopen the economy so that he can say he's gotten the country back on track and he can win re-election. That's ultimately what this seems to be about, right?
It's crystal clear that the federal government is not leading. They don't want to. They're not even leading from behind. They're just missing in action. We need strong leadership to say, this is how we reopen. This is the way we do it. If you do it this way, you will have confidence that you will be protected. Consumers won't go back to businesses if they feel unsafe. Workers certainly don't want to go back, and we're hearing that already. But that's a different issue because, you know, workers sometimes have no choice but to go back. Consumers have a choice. They can continue to stay at home. They can continue to order things from the comfort and the safety of their homes. If we want people to get back into businesses, we need to give them confidence that businesses are opening up safely. And the federal government needs to take the lead in doing that, and they have thus far failed to do so.
There were a couple of reports recently, one in These Times magazine by labor reporter Michelle Chen, who writes, "Workers fight for their lives, the spontaneous rebellion of low-wage workers exposed to COVID-19, and then Truthout published a piece entitled, "Workers are afraid of returning to work amid a pandemic. Will there be a general strike?" It seems as though in the absence of proper federal government support for workers and maybe a slow or inadequate response from OSHA and the Labor Department, one of the few recourses that workers do have is to strike, is to agitate. Of course, they may face severe retaliation, as many Amazon workers have found. But are you seeing reports such as this? Is there a sense that at some point the American worker is going to draw the line and say, "I'm not going to be sacrificed"?
Well, we are starting to see some of that. There are some unions that have, that the workers as part of unions have gone on strike, not official strikes, but just workers leaving the job for a while. This is incredibly important. And I think this is one of the things that we have seen as a touch point of this pandemic, is that it is once again ripping open the wounds that have never really been healed, because I think society hasn't sought to actually do the difficult work of healing it, of how systemic issues related to race, and that's both racism and economic issues and the inability to climb the economic ladder, how all of this is impacting us right now, and how we are completely unwilling to discuss those issues, even as people are dying. And they're dying because we're forcing them to go back to work so that we can have hamburgers and that we can have, exercise equipment in our homes. We need to, and I hope we will see a new awakening, as we're seeing in so many other areas of society, that this is the issue of our time, that gender justice, that racial justice, isn't just finished when you pass a law. Even if it is a landmark law like the Civil Rights Act, there's still so much to do. There's still so many ways in which Black and brown people and women and other disproportionate aspects of our society are being harmed and are not being given the tools that they need to care for them and their family.
Give out a website for Public Citizen Remington.
Yes, it is citizen.org. We're also on Twitter. It's a great Twitter account. I would also go there too.
We'll post a link to that from our website. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
My guest is Remington A. Gregg, Counsel for Civil Justice and Consumer Rights at Public Citizen. And we've been discussing how little the Trump administration appears to care for the health and safety of American workers. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.